20 seconds has already ticked me off. 20 seconds.
Yeah, it's a good thing.
I don't even know it's a record.
That's why I don't come at 6:50.
Yes. Unbelievable. Put that in the pod. Welcome back to Our Seats in the House. Michael
Welcome
Russo,
back.
Anthony
I'm
Panta.
Already angry. Yeah.
Well, it's because you just get my blood pressure up. I downloaded an app today to learn breathing exercises, and the app told me that I was more stressed after. Did I tell you about that?
No, but did it tell you that you're supposed to breathe in through your nose, not your mouth?
Well, I think that's what was going on. I think I was clearly breathing the wrong way. It started telling me that I was breathing either too shallow or too hard. I'm like, well,
they give you one of those little things like a guy going up the mountain, like breathe in till he gets to the top and then hold your breath.
Like a breathalyzer or something?
No, it's a breathing exercise.
I don't know what I was doing, but I was wrong. That's all I know.
Shocking that it didn't relieve your stress.
Yeah, I know. And then you just came here to give me a coronary. All right, so welcome back to Worst Seats in the House. Michael Russo, Anthony LaPanta coming to you live from Split Rocks. Thanks, as always, for coming in. Our next live show, we don't know yet. And the reason why we'll be doing one live show in May, but the reason why is I'm covering the playoffs, other markets for The Athletic. Well, assuming the Wild don't make it. If the Wild make it, then we actually would have a much easier time scheduling these. But I don't know yet when I'm leaving, and Anthony goes right to the Twins. So we also don't know his schedule. So stay tuned to both Twitter and to the future podcast this month, probably the fourth one. And we'll have a much better idea of when and where our next live show will be, whether it's Tuttle's Split Rocks here or at Elsie's.
I should make a confession that...
Do you know your schedule already?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay.
But this morning, coincidentally, as Margo and I are having coffee, she said, I'm surprised. She goes, guys don't have a podcast this week. And I said, I don't know, maybe we did four, maybe it just like a, we did an extra one in March or something. I don't know. And I said, yeah, it's kind of weird. Normally, Russo texts me or calls me early in the week and has a bunch of ideas for when we should do it. And about 10 minutes later, she sees on Twitter that we have a show here tonight and said, huh, you have a show tonight. So that was when I posted on, I replied to your tweet with, hey, there's good source of information here on
See,
Twitter.
See, I finally
today.
Helped you on Twitter. Yeah. That is funny. Normally, I actually am smart enough to, when we plan these shows, I usually text Margo and tell her to put it on your calendar. But this one, I must not
actually,
have.
I thought you had done that because she said it's not in the calendar. I said, well, I haven't put anything in the calendar in years.
Wasn't it, Brandon, you're on these text chains. Wasn't it like a week and a half ago where he wrote back Karen and said you could book April 3rd? Yeah. Yeah. So there you go.
Well, I'm not saying I didn't, that I shouldn't have known about it. I was just saying I didn't.
That's funny. All right. So we don't know the next live show, but pay attention to either this podcast or the Talk North Twitter account or the Russo Hockey or, well, the Russo
Watch
Hockey
for an
account.
Update on Twitter in
yeah.
the morning.
Yeah. And then when after I tweet the next live show, finally on the day of, Anthony will quote tweet it. What's going on behind us?
Nothing. I was just looking to see if they had the hockey game on. There was a line brawl at the start of the Rangers Devils game tonight with, remember, there were all the fireworks the last time around with Rempe and the cheap shot that he, well, they thought it was a cheap shot. Siegenthaler wanted to fight him. They wouldn't let him. So tonight they started 2 seconds in five simultaneous fights at the start of the game. I think the last one involved Ryan Carter.
Yep. I said that.
And he,
didn't he play center against Stu Bickel?
Against a former Gopher, right.
Yeah. Former Wild player, too.
And it was, I don't think it went too well for him in that fight, if I remember right.
Yeah.
It went better than it did for him against Foligno, but not.
What were you saying? Yep. I think Mike Rupp was in that. I don't know if he was in the line brawl. I got to look that up. I remember the names were big, and it was Pete DeBoer versus Tortorella, right?
I think so.
Yeah. Were the two coaches, and the coaches got in a lot of trouble. So I assume that same thing is going to happen here. We have a bunch of Worst Seats in the House t-shirts up here. So anytime you want to come up and ask a question, come on up to that awesome microphone right there And you don't have to be invited. But Anthony, I do have a for a change, a lot of things to talk about this week. Where do you want to start, Anthony? I kind of want to talk about the portal. And
college
how,
hockey?
Yeah, and how crazy it has been this week. I mean, first of all, today, and we've been sort of forecasting this on the last couple of pods, University of Wisconsin freshman, or sophomore, excuse me, soon to be a junior, Charlie Strammel went into the portal. He put a little note next to his name in the portal to tell teams that they don't need to contact him, which makes you think that, funny enough, even though he shouldn't know yet where he's going to play, he must know. And there are a lot of teams actually that I think have had interest in him. I think the Gophers are one. I've heard even teams like BC, Omaha, but at Michigan State makes a lot of sense to me just because of Adam Nightingale, his former national team coach, is the coach there. Isaac Howard left Duluth last year, but the portal has been crazy, and maybe it's been crazy the last 2 or 3 years, and I didn't even notice, and only noticed this time because of the fact that I was on Strammel watch. But this is nuts. Hundreds of players, it feels like, going into the portal.
I think there's more this year.
Yeah.
And it's terrible for college sports, in every sport. It was I don't know if you followed it in football at all, but it was essentially why Saban retired.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Said that it's not the same anymore. Now all of a sudden every guy comes in for their postseason meeting and they want to know what their position is guaranteed for next year, what they think their draft position could be if they left. Otherwise they're going to go in the portal. And he said it's just not the same anymore. Used to be guys committing to a program for 4 years. Some would leave early, but they knew that their college career was going to be in that one place. And I think this is terrible for college athletics. It's going to be a really difficult landscape now for the smaller schools to compete because they're going to take the guys. They always had to take the guys that got passed over by the elite schools, the bigger schools. But a lot of times they'd get those guys after they had played juniors for a couple of years and, okay, my dream of being a Gopher or playing at North Dakota or Boston College or wherever it is isn't going to work, so I'll sign at Minnesota State, or I'll sign at Michigan Tech, or whatever that next school was. Well, at least those guys knew then they were getting a guy that was likely going to be there for 4 years. Now they get that guy for 1 year, develop him, and then he's going to jump and go to one of the bigger schools. I think it's going to be terrible for college hockey. I think it's bad for college sports in general. As a fan, you can't follow it anymore. You have no idea. You flip on the college basketball tournament. I haven't watched a lot of it. I probably watched 4 or 5 minutes of 3 or 4 different games. And in every game without fail, it was this guy who played last year here and this guy who played last year there. It just isn't like it used to be. And I think it's done for the right reason, but it's being abused to the point where it's going to
I think the portal was put in for good reasons to give guys that just maybe need a fresh start or aren't elevating in the lineup. But I was talking to a college coach today that used Minnesota Duluth as an example and said, look at some of their championships and how many of those guys that were there, you know, and big parts of some of their 3 championships in the last 10 years wouldn't have been there if they had the chance to maybe leave. Like, in other words, you know, some of those guys that were juniors and seniors that under Scott Sandlin started as third liners, fourth liners, 13th forwards, 7th Ds, that had to work their way up to being integral parts of those championships by the time they won it. Well, who knows if they would have even been there. And I, to your point, like from smaller schools, the cool part of college hockey that I think is unlike a lot of the other college sports is that we've all gotten used to the fact that you have small schools in the Division I and big schools in the Division I, but they're always able to coexist together. And now if you're Bemidji State and you get a top player like Holcamp, well, you just know that he is going to leave, that he's going to wind up going to University of Denver.
They very rarely wind
wherever,
up getting the drafted players anyway. But where they've competed is we've got 21, 22-year-old freshmen that are going to play till they're 23 or 24 going up against your hotshot 18-year-old draft pick.
Right.
And that confrontation was always interesting. I don't think that'll be the case anymore.
Yeah. I was talking to Grant Pitolny today, and we were talking about this, and he just lost 14 guys in the portal. He was making it like, look, this is, it's a lot of guys leaving, but look, I don't have to find 14 guys. We have a great recruiting class coming in. He really only has to find a couple defensemen, a couple forwards and goalie, coincidentally, from the portal.
But you're turning over your entire roster.
Yes, exactly. And you know, from his standpoint too, it's just, you know, what he was saying is that years ago as a college coach, you always knew, you always forecast, all right, who's probably leaving after this year? You know, like, is Jimmy Snuggerud leaving or is he coming back? But if Jimmy Snuggerud is leaving, all right, we know this guy's potentially sort of a bubble guy in the USHL that we can bring in and things like that. He's like, now we have to draft, we have to like have recruiting classes that are just tons of players because we just never know if you're going to leave. And it just feels like college coaches have now become general managers where they have to sit there and even coaching games, look there and like, oh, that's a good player. That's a good player. I'll go after that guy. Maybe I can push this guy out and go get that guy. The other thing here is you have agents that are clearly that are NHL agents that are these acting as advisors. So the players are sort of wiping their hands clean of this, but the agents behind the scenes are working deals even beforehand. And let's be honest, and these agents do that in the NHL too. There's a reason why at 12:01 on free agency day, 20 deals are done when they're not supposed to be. You know, it's crazy.
Yeah, to me, the solution, and I'm a guy from the outside looking in. Tell the guys that if you want to use the portal the way it was designed to be used, which is for a guy that just was, he ended up in a terrible spot, didn't get along with a coach, whatever the case might be, the school wasn't right for him. You can transfer, but you got to sit out a year.
And which is the way it used to be.
And now if you do that, only guys that are in that extreme case, it isn't going to be just, well, I was the third line right wing at Northern Michigan this year. I got a chance to be the second line left wing at Michigan next year, so I'm going to jump. And the year after that, well, Michigan just brought in an 18-year-old who might be better than me, so maybe next year I'll go to Michigan State instead because they need a right wing on their first line.
Yeah.
It just, it's, I think it's bad for the game, and we'll see what happens. I these things always seem to have a way of working themselves out.
Yeah.
And sometimes they end up being a lesser problem than what you perceive at
the beginning. Well, especially now that, I mean, the COVID years are over and all those fifth year guys are gone and things like that. But it's just it's crazy. It's like free agency now. And it just feels like college sports have become the pros. And I know, look, I'm all for NIL and things like that. But now it's like, you know, guys are chasing money. You have big schools that have much, like even Minnesota does not have nearly the NIL money as Michigan and Ohio State. So you're fighting there. And then you have now, guys like free agents just jumping from school to school to school. Like they're traded. It's like even the Colin Graf kid that the Wild are trying to sign right now. I mean, he started at Union, right?
Just think about it this way. It's probably not that far away from a time where in order for college athletics to be competitive, they're going to have a salary cap.
Yeah.
For NIL money.
Yeah.
Think about it. For football, you're going to have to say Minnesota will never compete when you look at the guys that could and will jump and leave for the same reasons. I was a running back at Minnesota. If I go to Michigan, I got a chance to play in a national championship game and have more light on me. I'm going to take that. So I think pretty soon we'll be looking at a spot where they come up with some system where it's every team's got the same amount of money that they can –
You know, just last thing on the portal before we just talk quickly about Strammel is one thing I did find funny today because I talked to a bunch of college coaches and they all are upset about it. But all of them even said to me on the other side, it's like, but I'm being a little bit of a hypocrite because nobody wants to completely shut it down because it's like. They're getting fed by the beast too.
Right. Well,
and it's the same thing with the LTIR. It's like even the general managers, they go down there and they're all pissed off about it, but they don't want to get rid of it totally because one day they might need to dip into it.
Right.
You know,
but to me that's short-sighted because you could look at it and say, if we all have to play by the same rule, then nobody will ever be able to use it again. And I won't be in any different spot than anybody else when I can't use it.
Right. No, that's a good point. Strammel. So he's leaving University of Wisconsin. Obviously a fresh start that's needed, whatever the reason is. He wasn't getting a lot of playing time there. Hasn't obviously performed there, has like 24 combined points in 2 years under two different coaches, mind you, in Tony Granato and Mike Hastings. And clearly, just needed a fresh start. And now, you know, I'm sure like the Wild would love him to go to a team like the Gophers, especially because of their relationship with Bob Motzko and the respect they have and that playing him. I think it'd be great for him to get out of the state. I can't imagine the pressure that he would have. He's already under enough pressure here with Wild fans to then go play for the hometown team. Makes sense. If he goes to a team like Michigan State, Omaha, BC, whatever, I think that would be the best thing for him. And now it's on him. Now you can't, like, you know, it's not. Mike Hastings is an excellent hockey coach that has won a ton of collegiate games, had a great year at Wisconsin. But, you know, I know the Wild felt like he buried him right from the outset. True or not, now it's on you. So you're going to have to go to wherever your next spot is. And if that's Michigan State, play for Adam Nightingale. Now it's on you to like become a player here.
For sure. And a part of your development in any sport, hockey is no different than any other, where you got to earn that. You have to prove to if the coach first impression of you is not what you want it to be, well then change it. And I'm always concerned anytime people start moving more than once. And because it can't always be the coach. In this case, I don't know Charlie at all. I don't know what his relationship was with either of these coaches. This is probably what the portal was made for, was went to play for one guy. They bring in a different coach. You don't see eye to eye with that guy. That's a reasonable spot to say, all right, I'd like to go somewhere else. This isn't the guy that I agreed to come and play for when I signed my deal to play at Wisconsin. We'll see what happens. I know that I talked to a couple of people within the Wild organization, and they're like, look, we are not at all ready to give up on this guy and say that it was a miss. We think he's still developing. He just isn't putting up the points that everybody thought and hoped he would by this time.
And it's hard to do that when you're on the bench and playing 10 shifts a game and not getting a lot of special teams time and things like that. So we'll see. A lot of guys have left Wisconsin here in the last couple of days, draft picks and things like that. And we'll see if Charlie can sort of reinvigorate himself in another spot. As I mentioned, the Wild are trying to sign Colin Graf. He has cut down his teams like the Bruins, the Rangers are out, Predators, I hear, are out. But I'm still being told by people very close to Colin that the Wild are in it, which makes me think that they really are in it. Now, we've seen them become the runner-up before. Last year with Ben Myers. Was it last year with Ben Myers or 2 years ago? I can't remember. To Colorado. They've been the runner-up in past. Sometimes these guys get so overhyped. But not a lot of college free agents have the upside this kid does. He is a very, very solid offensive thinker. Power play runs through him at Quinnipiac. And we'll see if he can become a player, and maybe it'll be here in Minnesota.
It's always an interesting dynamic because it becomes a sweepstakes that feels like a bigger deal than it usually really is.
Yeah.
Very rarely are these guys impact guys. And you think about the guys who played a college career as undrafted players and then signed afterward. It's rare that those guys become impact players. A lot of them become good NHL players.
Yep. There are some like the Adam Oates and the St. Louis and people like that, but most of them are guys that are up and down tweeners or Casey Wellmans. You know, Nico's a good one, but he's a good player. Right. You hype these guys up and hype you guys up. And look, Nico's a good player, but that's what you are usually hyping up.
They're not guys that are likely to make a major difference in your organization.
But I remember Casey Wellman. I once wrote a 45-inch feature on him at the Star Tribune. And let's just say he didn't exactly pan out. But then there's some guys that, like, I remember being in Nashville at my buddy Marty's house when I got word that the Wild were signing some kid named Nate Prosser, and it was a dot, dot, dot on the bottom of an article. It was supposed to be just a nothing thing. And there's a guy that carved out a dozen-year career in the NHL. So some guys still at least have long careers. So we'll see. This is a way for teams that might not have prospects right away to supplement that and get them into the lineup right away. The one reason why I still was a little surprised that the Wild are a finalist is I do think the one thing that helps this the Wild here is that they don't have a lot of right shot prospects. But if you know, the one thing I know about this kid, Colin Graf, is that he's looking to go to a place where you're going to have a 10-year career or a long NHL career, not just a couple-year career. And if you're looking at the Wild's prospect pool and you're his agent and you're starting to say, all right, yeah, but Yurov and Kuznetsov and Rossi and Boldy and Hunter Haidt and Riley Haidt and Ogren's coming. It's like suddenly there's just a lot of kids here. And usually the way it works is most teams are going to sit there and invest in their draft picks and try to give them better opportunities than a college free agent. So that would be the only reason why if the Wild do wind up not the final team here, I can see that being the reason, and a valid one if you're Colin Graf.
There have been some signings, though, that have surprised me in that way with the teams that guys chose.
Yes.
And like Myers is Ben one Meyer, of them.
And he's on his second team.
Right.
It was a stupid decision by him. It's that simple. Sometimes guys say, you know, who's the kid that just signed with Florida last year? And it's like, look, you're not getting an opportunity there. You know, and so, but you're right. I mean, if you are Colin Graf and you want to play right now and maybe even next year, this might be a really good opportunity, but you've got to know that there's this just infusion of kids coming to this organization that are starting now. I mean, we saw Firstoff's back. Liam Ogren just went to Iowa. You know, they're still trying to get Uroff. Riley Height is going to be given every opportunity. Closer, they just signed Kumpelainen, and Hunter Haight's turning pro next year. So there's a lot. There are a lot of options to buy glasses out there. If you've been disappointed by high prices or poor online quality, check out our friends at Huxley Optical. I like Huxley for two reasons. First is the price. Simply put, I don't want to spend $800 on glasses. At Huxley, I know I'll get the same quality for half the price. They're a small independent business that is here to help you find glasses you love and save you money. Second is the service. They have options catered to what I need, and I know someone will be happy to help me find glasses. Whether it's a lens replacement, office glasses, or a brand new pair, they're always ready to help. Check out HuxleyEyewear.com. Again, that's HuxleyEyewear.com today. Or go to their locations in Wayzata or Roseville. Tell them Russo sent you for 10% off your prescription purchase. Hey, this is Russo for Livia Weight Control Centers. Now is the time to get a jump on summer. You could lose up to 20 pounds or more in your first 8 weeks the Livia way. When you join Livia, you'll receive a personalized and doctor-recommended program tailored to your unique needs, goals, and lifestyle. Livia's amazing team of registered dietitians and nutritionists will guide you every step of the way, just like me. If you join Livia today, you'll get your first 8 weeks free. What could that equate to? Well, obviously, everybody's different, but after 8 weeks, I was down 20 pounds, and I'm now closing in on 30 because of the one-on-one support that I receive at my Livia Center in Woodbury, the great food I get from them that I complement with a nutritional program that they custom designed for me and my long days and hectic travel. Join Livia today and get your first 8 weeks free. Visit Livia.com, that's L-I-V-E-A.com, or call 855-GO-LIVIA. Make sure to let them know Russo sent you and they'll get you all set up. Plus, Livia is now offering GLP-1 medications, so ask for more information on that. Quiet the food noise and see accelerated results by summer. Visit Livia.com or call 855-GO-LIVIA. Start your weight loss journey now and get a jump on summer the Livia way. All right, let's talk about the Wild. And again, if you have questions come on up, let's talk about let's start with Ryan Hartman before we get to the goalie pull decision, which I know is something that you and I have been discussing, between us for the last couple of days. But Ryan Hartman, man, understandably very frustrated the other night. He got clubbed in the head by Noah Hanifan. On the bench, he's lucky there he didn't get a misconduct because I was watching him throughout the end of the third period and the overtime, and he was going off on the ref. So then obviously at the end of the day, he lost his temper, tried to leave, came back and threw his stick on the ice like a javelin. And now he's paying the piper.
He is. And it's a mistake you can't make. I get the frustration, the pressure of a playoff race and a game that the team really needed. And the missed call was blatant. That game's totally different if Minnesota starts the game in overtime on a power play.
Or maybe even scores at the end of regulation.
And it's frustrating, I'm sure. And he seems to, and especially for a guy like him, who a lot because of his own issues, can't breathe on somebody and not get a penalty. And then he gets clubbed in the head and it doesn't get called. So I'm sure that there's a frustration level that's not far beneath the surface with him, but you can't do what he did. And he admitted that and said that, and especially at this time of year. The only thing I'll say, and I asked Ryan Carter this the other night, I don't get the sense like anybody within the room begrudges him for his actions.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you'll sense that, all right, guys are rolling their eyes like, all right, well, we have a big game tonight and we don't have him because he lost his head and threw a tantrum. I get the feeling like, I don't want to say the guys supported it, but I didn't get the feeling like there were guys like, all right, we've seen enough of this. It's time to.
Yeah, no, Ryan's a very, very liked teammate.
Yeah, but even from the coaching staff.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't get the sense from them that they were like, oh, my God. I mean, probably the one guy who had lost his patience with him was Dean Evason.
Yes.
All the other assistant coaches seemed to embrace him a little bit. And when he plays on the edge, we've talked about it so many times. Like, if he's right on the line, he's a heck of a valuable player. And if you're going to play on the line every once in a while, you're going to cross it. And he's done a much better job this year staying on the right side of it. But this was just a bad – you can't make that call. The game's over. There's nothing that's going to change. You got to be able to walk away. And it's costing him, and it's costing
him. Yeah, it's costing him a lot of money, too. And his contract goes up to $4 million next year, and he'll start losing $45,000 a game when he's suspended next time, if he's suspended next time. So he's got to clean up his act. And he knows, as you said, the scrutiny of the Department of Player Safety is absolutely all over him, because I had gotten the sense from sources inside that that league is that the one reason they didn't give him the automatic suspension was because they were going to probably give him two games, say give him a little bit of a break. And then for some reason they gave him three. And I think it is because of his history. And the other thing is, and I know that he talked the other day and he owned it. He owned that he made a mistake and lost his frustration. He was over the top upset, but he does have to realize that he's got to figure out a way to ingratiate himself better with the referees and the linesmen. Like they are after him. He's got to figure out a way to have better relationships with them and not be, you know, he comes across, I think, to them as somebody that always has a chip on his shoulder. And I'm saying this from talking to them. Like they tell me that he's not, you know, he's not the most lovey dovey type of guy. But sometimes you got to just kiss up, like, hey, Wes, how are you today? You're like, yeah, how's your family? You know, I saw your daughter's playing well at St. Thomas. You know, like sometimes you got to do stuff like that. Just to develop relationships, because I talked to a lot of refs and they've had some great relationships with agitators over the years in the league.
Well, the one that comes to mind for me is Brad Marchand.
Yeah.
He might be as big of a donkey as there is in the league and as
officials love him.
And the refs all seem to like him.
Yeah. Cause he is like, you know, he's just got that personality. And so here's just one other funny thing to lighten the mood on Ryan Hartman. I was thinking about this the other day. You know who the team disciplinarian is? It's Ryan Hartman. So Ryan Hartman is the one that levies out all team fines on the team to the players. Like they have, you know, if you're late for the boss or that, like he's the one that levies it and collects it. And there's almost fitting. It's like if anybody has the experience on how to do that job, well, it's him. And it's kind of funny.
I guess the NHL's in a similar spot.
Yeah, exactly.
George Parros being the guy that's
exactly
levying the fines. Yeah. And
years from
suspensions.
Now, Ryan Hartman is going to be the head of the Department of Player Safety. That'd be perfect. You know, like all of a sudden guy gets suspended off a face-off because he high sticks somebody in the teeth. I've done that before. All right, let's talk about the goalie decision the other night. You know, it surprised all of us, you know, 3 weeks ago when he did it against Nashville and he was the toast of the league because it worked. And he definitely caught the Predators off guard. Now I think teams have always been expecting it because it happened. This one was weird because it was late in the overtime. And they're no longer really chasing Vegas at that point. They're chasing LA, who, as you've mentioned, is the team most likely to sort of fall apart. And they're this close from being, at that point, seven back. If they win in that last 90 seconds of overtime or get to the shootout and win, and remember, they're playing a team without Jack Eichel at that point, they're going to be six back. And now then LA loses that night against Calgary. Then they lose again the other night and the Wild beat Ottawa. So technically today they could be four back going into LA's playing tonight.
But they have the same number of games right now.
And they have one head-to-head game. It just seemed like at that point, not the, you know, it was a peculiar decision at that point.
Yeah, and I always hate to second-guess coaches because they're making these decisions with a lot of light on them. But in this case, when they had done it against Nashville, we talked on the next podcast, and I had guessed that it was a let's be aggressive, let's let her rip, and let's have that be the attitude the rest of the way. And because of it, it felt like that kind of a decision.
You called it a galvanizing thing.
Right.
You
know. I thought it might just be hey, guys, the trade deadline's passed. We were sellers, but now let's frickin' go. And if you remember, they had lost the tough game in Colorado that they played their asses off and got beaten overtime by the Avalanche on a power play goal for Colorado. And that was when he said they discussed it on the plane ride home that if they were in that spot, they'd consider it. And we talked on the next show, and I said, I think it had that effect, but I also don't think we'll see it again because it doesn't make any sense mathematically to do it. Where it would have been, you and I were sitting watching the game, and another couple writers came over and said, hey, do you think we'll see it again today? And I said, I hope not, unless it's at the end of regulation where you have a chance to get 2 points and give Vegas zero. Because that's where it makes some sense to take a risk. Once you're in the overtime, they're going to get a point anyway. It isn't like if you pull the goaltender, you have a chance to go 2-0. It's going to be 2-1. And they were still chasing Vegas, but they weren't the only team they were chasing. They were also chasing LA, and I thought LA was
at that
more,
point was under Vegas too, right?
At that time.
Yep.
But I felt like it was it was a decision that it was a risk that I thought was not worth the potential reward, because even in a best case scenario, it works, you get 2 points. Vegas is still going to get one. And the risk is that you give away zero and or you get zero. And I felt like it was a team that was really chugging along, playing well, 7-1-3 in 11 games heading into that game. And it just felt like it popped the balloon right then and there. Now, they came back and responded well with the win against Ottawa, but it just would have a totally different feel if right now they were four back going into these games this week, knowing you've got one against LA still on the horizon. And as we talked, these other teams, they're just not complete teams that are on a roll right now. That night, St. Louis gets run over at home by San Jose 4-0, a team that had won once in 19.
Yeah.
LA was in Calgary. At one point, they had been outshot 30-6 in that game. And supposedly, LA's the team, you know, putting the pedal to the metal for a playoff race. They lost the game like 4-2, but I watched those two games that night thinking, this is why if the Wild just kind of keep plugging away as Hines's mantra has been, you get to that last week and make it be meaningful. His actions didn't follow the mantra. It was like it was kind of a gambler move that went away from the let's just keep our tunnel vision here, trying to get 75% of all points and see what happens. I asked him about it the next day, and he was like, nope, it sounds like he'll do it again if he's in the spot. So, you know, if you get the credit when it works, you got to take the blame when it doesn't. He did that and was willing to do that. I just think mathematically it doesn't make a lot of sense in the overtime to do it again. The other thing that went in Nashville, everything kind of lined up right. He was getting his guys on. Nashville had just sent their best defensive players, O'Reilly and McDonough, to the bench. In this case,
and Yossi.
Vegas has Petrangelo, Marchessault, Carlson on the ice. I can't imagine three guys you'd rather have on the ice.
Two great penalty killers, and then the Marchessault that if anybody's going to put it 150 feet into the empty net
and
with
just
no
three
space,
winners.
It's them.
Just guys that are like, if the game's on the line and I got to defend somebody, those are the three I think I'd pick on that roster. So it was just a bad sequence. Logan Thompson was playing well. The shot Zuccarello took wasn't really like a high danger shot that led to a 50-50 puck on the rebound where Boldy's against Nashville is a one-timer that if he hits it, it's going to score. So there were a lot of things going there. And I don't know even if it had worked and they had won, I'd still say, you know what? I just, until you get to that final week where it might be truly like desperation time at the end of regulation, where it's got to be a regulation win or you're out. Up until that point, I don't think I'd be making that call, but we'll see. It sounds like you might do it again.
Let me just ask you the one thing, and this is definitely not why Hines did it, but let's just say the Wild went on a miracle run and finished eighth. We've talked about how the fact that you don't think the Wild right now match up against the top teams in the West, like all you're really achieving is playing Dallas, who has destroyed the Wild for 2 or 3 years, not just in the playoffs, but in the regular season. Like, I mean, this year,
but it's still worth it to get there. There is no question that getting there and playing in that is good for the organization for a myriad of reasons.
Giving Rossi a chance to play in the
playoffs. These guys have played like huge minutes in big games all the way down the stretch.
Faber.
Getting into the playoffs and learning the lessons. I think the guy, the athletic writer in St. Louis,
Jeremy Rutherford,
he just wrote a good article about this that was the St. Louis guys talking about the value of playing.
Of losing. But sometimes you got to fall off the to get to the mountaintop, you got to fall off. You know?
And so it's invaluable if you can get there. And the experience the teams
have. Well, the Wild
have
a lot of experience in falling off in the playoffs. That's
they do,
for sure.
But this team doesn't
yet.
This team doesn't yet. This core of young guys is still. It's worth it to get there. It's worth it just to be in it till the final week. And you look at the minutes in key games that the guys like Faber and Rossi and Husnadinov's getting a few more minutes each night now. And those guys playing in those spots, like Faber last year, he played the last two games. He was playing 12 minutes a night, played in all six playoff games, playing on the third pair and 14 minutes a night. Now he's playing 25 against the other team's best.
Yeah.
That's different. And you also never know. You really don't. If you got into
maybe
the playoffs,
Freddie Goudreau will become Freddie Goudreau of the Nashville Predators again, scoring every playoff.
If you face off against Colorado, look at the games they've played against Colorado. I mean, the one out in Denver, it's not to say you couldn't beat those guys.
Yep.
You'd certainly be the underdog, and it would be an upset, and it would be a huge upset.
Yep.
But why not?
You know, I'm chatting with tomorrow morning. It's going to be his final game ever in Minnesota.
Zach Parise.
Yep. I just texted with him today and meet with him tomorrow. And, you know, I do hope the Wild acknowledge him hopefully they don't have stage fright because of the way that the fans treated Ryan Suter last year in the playoffs. But Ryan Suter and Zach are different people. Like, I hope the Wild acknowledge him.
Because Suter, remember, part of that was his hit on Kaprizov early in the series.
Yep. So exactly. Which I don't think that Ryan's willing to accept that that's actually why the fans were, you know, saying F you Suter. You know, Zach was an incredible player here in Minnesota. He's the all-time leading goal scorer of Minnesota-born players. Had a good career here in Minnesota, made the playoffs every single season, except for the one under Fenton. You know, he deserves a little send-off here as his last game, and I do hope that he's acknowledged, but at a minimum, I hope that, because these are very astute fans here, even if the Wild don't acknowledge him, that they realize that this is something. He's retiring from a long, really successful career. Has a chance to win a cup, obviously, with Colorado. Went to the cup final before he got to Minnesota the year, you know, a week and a half before. I'm looking forward to actually chat with him about the story.
Yeah, I think it's those guys changed the franchise forever for the better. It became a legitimate franchise.
Yep.
I shouldn't say that. It became a legitimate, like, playoff contender. Making the playoffs was a bonus every year up until then. And when they arrived, they were in the postseason every year.
Yeah.
And they solidified that young core we've talked about so many times.
They made the playoffs three times before they arrived. And
made it every year.
Yep.
It was 10 out of 11 heading into this year that those guys were a big part of that core that turned this team into a perennial playoff team. So they deserve credit for that. I know it didn't end the way they wanted it to end, or the Wild saw it ending, or fans maybe saw it ending, but they were a significant part of the history of the franchise.
Yeah. I do want to, by the way, if you want to come up and ask questions, we have somebody that came up. Feel free. You don't have to be invited. Just come up and get online. Make sure you grab a t-shirt after you ask a question. But all of you remind me, because I have a tendency to forget things. I do want to discuss the goalie situation with you going into next season, especially in light of Joe Smith's awesome story today on Jesper Wallstedt. Question, sir.
Yeah. Hopefully you can hear me.
Yes.
I figure Zach Parise was the perfect segue to this. You look at the abuse that he took in front of the net, Eric Staal took when he was here, Ryan Hartman getting high-sticked in the face. I'm just wondering, is there going to be any potential anywhere where, whether it's officials get a fine? I mean, it's hard to say that, but is there any recourse for that? You're not going to suspend an official.
This is the age-old question of everybody, you know, every fan. You know, that Anthony and I have been talking about this a lot lately, of that we both just don't understand why, and this has been in the history of officiating in all sports, especially in hockey, why you could watch egregious acts take place and just not call it. That was the Hartman one, Anthony, was far from the only one in that game. Erickson Ek had two big penalties taken against him that weren't called. And there are fans paying incredible amounts of money to come to these home games, and it is just absolutely not fair that you have officials just ignoring incredible acts that do turn games
around.
They
do turn games, and the missed trip on Erickson Ek, that to me is different. I think the ones that bother me are when they chose to watch Zach Parise get cross-checked in the back 3, 4, 5 times in a row.
We see with Kaprizov
and say that, well, it wasn't much. It wasn't much. The guy's on the injured list, and you don't, it isn't, that's the one, those are the ones that bother me, where they know it's a cross check. They've decided that it's part of the game and we don't want to take it out of the game, and then take it out of the rule book and say it's legal to cross check people if you're going to say that. Otherwise, call it. You're going to miss calls, and you go to every city and everybody thinks the referees miss calls on their team more often than most. I think the Wild have hurt themselves with reputation. They're one of the most penalized teams in the league. That doesn't happen by accident. Certainly there have been missed calls that should have gone the Wild's way. There have been missed calls that should have been more penalties against Minnesota. But their reputation has hurt them in that way, and that's they have to own that.
Yeah, I have a lot of respect for Stephen Walken, who's the head of the officiating, but I do think the lack of transparency on the alleged accountability that officials deal with.
And they're never going to fine an official for a missed call. They're just not. Yeah. But, and they do. The best ones get assigned playoff series and all of that. But I love what baseball's done. They put out a report card after the game on missed calls, missed strikes and balls. And
And you and I have both been in the Department of Player Safety. We know that report card is being taken.
Right.
Like there are, it's a color-coded system where these guys mark missed calls, bad calls, blah, blah, blah. So it's there.
Right.
It's a report that goes to Stephen Walcom nightly. For all we know, the referees, I know we know, the referees get it on their laptop the next day, you know, what their report is, video of missed calls, blah, 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 blah. But in terms of, from our standpoint, it's hard for us to ever see that accountability because we don't get to see it.
Yeah, I wonder how much you'd hurt the credibility of the referees in
to know who's
as like, an authoritative yeah. figure on the ice if they get that report card and it's public. And now the next time they ref that same team,
yeah.
the guy's like, you know, you owe me this, or we, you cost us three yeah. last time. Or I fear that it would head down a bad road. But I do wish there was some kind of accountability system so that Ryan Hartman gets three games. Well, how about the guy that misses the high stick that could have changed the outcome of the game? There, yeah. there should be something acknowledged.
And let's be honest, it was that same ref that missed like 16 things in that game. It's just crazy.
It wasn't a great night.
Yeah.
So you talked, a quick comment and then a question. So you talked about players need to buddy up to the refs. I was at the Middleton podcast, and Middleton said, I can't even talk to that ref. He won't talk to me. From whatever it is that he hates Middleton about. So
yeah.
you're damned if you do, if you're damned if you don't know. So my question is...
Especially that one. I do think they have sort of made up this year because he hasn't been called on penalties by that guy this year. And I think if I remember correctly, I have the best memory on some things and the worst on others. Like the other day I was talking about Sean Burke and I were talking about a conversation that he and I had in a cab in Buffalo in 1998, and he and I remembered every detail of it. But yet on this one, I feel like Jake told me this season that he and that ref kind of kissed and made up, but I'm not positive. I could be envisioning this. Who knows? Imagining it.
So my question is, you talked about Wahlstedt getting games this year. So last two home games before the last game is tomorrow night, Colorado, Saturday, Winnipeg. I'm going down to Des Moines for Wahlstedt bobblehead night.
Yeah. Is that Saturday or Tuesday?
Saturday. So would they call him up after that to take him on the road?
Well, that's because the thing. Like, I don't think they want to bring him up until they're mathematically out. That is it. And he doesn't need 5, 6, 7 games. But I definitely think it's incumbent on the Wild to not have his lasting memory into the summer being that 7-2 loss in Dallas. So I think that he'll be there. His parents, by the way, are in Rockford. If you read in Joe's story in Iowa to go to the Rockford game and all that stuff. So, I definitely think they want to keep him there, but I thought they, if they had lost a couple more games of series, I figured that he'd be up because they'd want to give him some home games. And I would think the final regular season game at home, you'd think you'd want to go with one of your two guys. So my guess is that he gets two or three, like they bring him on the road and he gets a couple games. But if they keep winning, it's going to be hard to.
Yeah, and I think it's less important than you do for him to get another NHL game. I just don't think it matters that much at this point. It'd be different if you were bringing him up in February and he yeah. was going to be the NHL.
It's not just that. They have a decision to make about their goaltending.
Right,
and one has to decide if he's on the team next year.
And I don't think you learn that much from watching one more NHL game. Mm-hmm. I think if it was February and you were out of it or you had an injury at the position and it was going to be, we're going to get a look at this guy for 2 months, that's different. To see him play one more game or two more games, I don't think you necessarily learn anything in those games that you don't already know about this guy. I think they believe in him. And it'll be training camp next year that'll tell the story yep. about
whether he's remember. Ready. Do they only have one home game after the road trip?
Yep. They have yeah. Seattle.
So that's the other thing. Like, let's just say that LA game means something. Like, who knows if we do see him this season, right? Like, right. like you're not playing him against the Kings if you got to win that game.
In an ideal world, yeah. if you knew you weren't going to make it, you'd love to let him play four games.
Yeah.
But to bring him up and make a big deal about seeing him once, I just think is a lesser yeah. factor than.
So my theory is now, because look, I think they're going to re-sign Flower. I don't think he wants to retire, and I think he wants to come back here, and I think Billy wants him to come back. So I think they re-sign him. So I think that what they're going to do is they're going to go into the summer and saying, all right, we're coming back with Fleury and Gustafson, and then behind the scenes all summer, I bet you they're going to try to see if they can get something for Gus. And if they can get something for Gus that is worth it, then you come back with Wallstedt and Fleury. If Gus is either, you know, you can't trade him, or what you're getting in terms of offers make zero sense, then obviously you come back and you start the season with the two of them, and Wallstedt starts in the minor. So that's I think it's more so now that it's either going to be, before we were wondering, is it going to be Gus, Wallstedt, Fleury, Wallstedt, Fleury? Now it's either, I think it's going to be Fleury, Gus, or Fleury, Wallstedt next year.
Hey there, it's Russo from my friends at Aquarius Home Services. You know, they say knowledge is power, but sometimes it's who you know that truly matters. And I'm grateful to know the team at Aquarius. Why? Because my home functions seamlessly with their help. They handle everything from electrical and plumbing issues to furnace repairs and installing new water heaters. Whether it's fixing flickering lights or ensuring my furnace is running smoothly like Nick did during my biannual tune-up the other day, Aquarius always has me covered for all of my home needs. Aquarius believes in earning the right to be recommended. That's why I recommend them every week on this show. They're just a click away at AquariusHomeServices.com, and don't forget to mention Russo sent you.
Hey everyone, attorney Jerry Bosch here with Bosch Law Firm and WorkCompExperts.com. For almost 30 years, we've represented Minnesotans just like you all over the great state of Minnesota to guarantee they've been treated fairly and with respect when they've suffered a work-related injury. A work injury can change your life in an instant. You need someone on your side who can help you focus on getting back on your feet and getting paid while you do. You may be entitled to medical benefits, wage loss benefits, job placement, retraining, and payment for permanent disability. To make sure you are being paid all the work comp benefits you're entitled to, please call the attorneys at Bosch Law Firm. The call is always free, and there's never a fee unless we recover benefits on your behalf. Call 651-333-8300, Bosch Law Firm, or visit us at WorkCompExperts.com.
Don't wait. Save smarter with a 5.10% annual percentage yield 13-month certificate from Royal Credit Union. Royal's 5.10% 13-month certificate has no minimum opening balance and a locked-in rate for a guaranteed return on your investment. Open a 5.10% 13-month certificate at any Royal office or online at rcu.org/certificate510. Early withdrawal penalties could reduce earnings and principal. APY accurate as of 3/1/24. Insured by NCUA.
How long does Johansson on the second line experiment continue?
Experiment? It's not even an experiment
anymore. Two more games until Hartman's not suspended anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why he's there. Hartman's playing with Zuccarello and Rossi on that line.
Yeah, but couldn't they slip Beckman or even Shaw up there? Somebody that wants to shoot a little bit?
None of those guys. I mean, Johansson's so much more accomplished NHL scorer than any of these guys. I mean,
his point, how about that one play yesterday where he passed off to Zucchi and he was between the circles?
Line passed a couple shots, but that was also, I thought, their best line for 2.5 periods yesterday in terms of time in the offensive zone. And look, I mean, everybody is all over Johansson this year, but compare him to these other guys. I mean, Beckman has had opportunities and hasn't done anything. He's a fourth line guy. And Johansson is a 35 to 45 point scorer in the NHL. He isn't going to score 80. He never will, but he's going to score 35 to 40. And these other guys just aren't. And you can name them all. I mean, Beckman, Duhaime, Dewar, Letteri, Lucchini. They're all the same. Not one of them has taken the ball and run with it when they've been given that opportunity. All these people were like chirping about Husnadinov and what the guy had 3 shots on goal in his first 7 games. I mean, this is not a guy that is like ready right now to supplant a proven NHL scorer.
Yeah, I think he's got a chance to be a good player. Why isn't Husnadinov with Kaprizov and Boldy thing is insane to me.
It's nuts.
Like everybody here on the like fans, like you. Like, we've been waiting for years of people wanting Eriksson Ek there. They finally do it. Get him off and put Husnadinov.
Right.
Or, like, you know, like, all year long. Why isn't Rossi with Kaprizov? Why isn't Rossi with Kaprizov? Now you want, if you move Husnadinov up to that line, then you're making Rossi your third line guy. Like, pick a side, people.
Right. And Husnadinov looks like he's going to be a good player. His last couple of games have been his best two. Looks like a middle of the lineup type of guy. But he's never been a big scorer anywhere he's been. And his best shift, he hit a post, and everybody like, hey, look at he's 50, he's winning faceoff. Well, he's 51%. I mean, and a lot of that was he beat up 2 Ducks games where they're one of the worst faceoff teams in the league. I'm just saying, like, tone it down a little bit when we start to say that these guys are. I mean, Ryan Hartman has scored 30 in the NHL, And none of these other guys have come anywhere close to that. Let them earn their way up there. And if Mason Shaw has another game like he had the other day, if he is able to back that up and score again and score again, if Vinny Leteri can score again, well, now all of a sudden, all right, give him a chance further up in the lineup. They've all had it, and none of them have done anything with it. So it,
and to that point, the one thing also, like, let's remember Bill Guerin, John Hines, their job is to win hockey games. They're going to do everything that they can, that they think is in the best interest of this organization to win hockey games. They are not holding guys back if they think that they can win hockey games. And I think all of us, not just the fans, me too, need to always remember that. Like, yeah, we're like, where's Beckman? Where's Beckman? Where's Beckman? Let's remember this organization has had Beckman in the organization for 3-4 years. They see him every day in Iowa. They see him in practices every day in Iowa. They know what his skill set is. And then they finally bring up here, and so far he still has no NHL goals. And so I guess the point is that every time that we're bitching and moaning about the organization holding guys back, we always got to remember that they know much more than we do. And another example that I'll put there is Charlie Strammel. Like, you know, I'm sitting there, even me from here, like Hastings hasn't given him a shot. He buried him from the beginning, Hastings' job is to win hockey games. If Hastings thought that Charlie Strammel should be in his top three lines, he'd put him there. He sees him in practice every day. He sees him in
and
games
every
day.
That's why I said you can't keep saying it's the coach's fault.
Right.
You've got to change it. And all of these guys, every time they come up, we've talked about them on our show. We've talked about them on our broadcast, that when you get that opportunity, when you're a guy coming out of the American Hockey League, your job is to do something that makes you impossible to replace. And all these guys, you can say whatever you want about, like, well, you haven't got power play time. Well, I mean, you played 10 minutes a night in 25 games and you have zero goals. If you had scored two, maybe you could argue that, okay, well, let's give the guy a shot on the power play. But until you do anything, those jobs are always, and not just with the Minnesota Wild, with every team in the NHL, they're going to go to the guys that have proven that they can do it at that level. And once you do something that shows that you can do it better than the guy ahead of you, do you think John Hines is going to say, well, tell you what, Murat Husnadinov is a lot better than Marcus Johansson, but I'm going to play Marcus Johansson anyway just for the hell of it? I mean, that's just not the way those guys think. And as soon as those guys play their way up there and demand that time, Marco Rossi had to do it. We talked last year on the show a lot of times, and I was like, look, until he plays better than the guys in front of him, he's going to be on the third or fourth line. And this year, he's played his way into a top six role. I still think he has more to show, that he can prove that he can be a top six guy on a good team year in, year out. But this year, he's in the top six forwards for the Minnesota Wild.
Yeah.
Last year, he was not. He played 19 games. He had one assist. He played on the third or fourth line and went back to Iowa. This year, he's earned his way to be up in that top six most nights, not every night, most nights. And that's what any of these other young guys have to do.
Yeah, he'll continue to get better. He's still young, but even now, like, you know, you'd love to see him produce much more than he is in the role and the minutes that he's getting, especially with them, you know, having Foligno out of the lineup, Hartman suspended. Like, last night was a game that you just kind of wish he dominated. I know he was in the offensive zone all night with Zuccarello and Johansson, but I do think that my gut says that Rossi's going to come back next year a much hungrier player.
I think he'll be stronger. Yep. He'll be a year more mature. But let's also keep in mind, we've had one rookie in the history of the franchise who scored more goals than he has this year.
Exactly.
And that was Kaprizov, who was a much older rookie. He's doing this at 22 years old. And we had a stat, I don't know if you saw the graphic we had the other night, there's only one team in the league that's gotten more production from guys 22 and under than the Wild so far this year. These guys aren't just rookies. They're young rookies. So it's going to take them a little bit.
Yep. Sorry to make you wait for 10 minutes.
No. So I was at the game last night. I wasn't able to watch the broadcast, but middle of the third period, there was a no goal call, and I haven't gotten any clarification on that or seen anything on it. So what are your guys' thoughts on that?
It was a missed call. They blew the whistle. The referee said that it was because the stick into the pads jarred the puck loose, but the puck was loose before the stick hit the pad.
It was firm and south on the ref. I had a delay in my tweet, and I was praising Dan O'Rourke for the call that he made, and then it went out at the same time as that call, and fans thought I was talking about that. But on that one, if you look at the replay that Anthony was critical about at the very beginning and saw it live, even like he was never even, this was not your, like what the ref was pointing to was that you're not allowed to pitchfork a guy into the net and then the puck go with him and it's a goal. And he was waving it off. It's just a bad call. The guy was not pitchforked at all.
The puck was loose. Yeah. The first whack misses the puck. Yeah. The second whack, he misses the puck, makes a little contact with the pad, but the puck was already loose. It didn't move him.
Yeah.
He was just in a bad position. He was on the other corner and he blew the whistle and blew the play dead. It was just a call they missed.
Yeah, and he's normally, Foreman South is normally a really good ref.
Is Marshall Warren officially not signing with the Wild, or what's the story with him?
He's already, I don't think, part of their organization.
Okay, it's
right?
Interesting we had three BC prospects.
Yeah, I know.
Nestrenko, McBain, and now Warren.
Yeah, they're three all in gone. Yeah, and from a GM that went there.
Right.
He's very crazy. That's pretty interesting. But yeah, Warren's already gone. The only prospect that they're definitely not signing is Petrovsky. Who's in the World Juniors for Slovakia. I think they just feel like there's a lot of redundancy with him and other prospects they have in the organization, and they're going to let him go, and he can go back in the draft. But it sounds like he already has overseas. Like, it sounds like he's signing in Europe, so that's probably what's going on there. Any other questions before we continue the pod? I don't know if you've, we just put it up this afternoon. You got to read Joe Smith's story on Volstead. This story, Anthony, was really, really quality. He spent a lot of time with him down there. And then the quotes are unbelievable where he just, you know, there's no excuses. There are no, they set me up to fail in Dallas. He's like, I thought I was ready. I clearly learned I'm not ready. And these are the things that I learned that I have to get better at. And I feel like I'm much more ready now than I was then. Everything he said is like, you know, he went through the game and he's like, all right, I was rattled. I was nervous going in. I thought I was ready for the moment. I wasn't. I give up the first goal. Then Jason Robertson, they get scores. They challenge. Luckily, they took this goal off the board. And then all of a sudden, I'm like, all right, that'll wake me up. That'll wake me up. And then immediately I'm sniped against and sniped against and sniped against. And he basically said that it was a humbling experience and that he left there like, I'm more determined to get ready. And he said the other thing that's really incredible is that on the plane where he was feeling like absolute crud, all of a sudden John Hines went to the back of the plane and sat next to him and talked to him about his start, encouraged him, told him he'd be better for it, and all that stuff that a good coach is like a very aware thing of the coach to do.
Yeah, I haven't read the story, but it doesn't surprise me because I think that's been the mantra of his whole season, was that he had his eyes opened a little bit to a lot of elements about preparation, about fitness, about the focus, the commitment, the strength, all of that stuff. He talked about that when we were over in Sweden, that he had made a concerted effort to be different in those areas. And that'll be great. I think a lot of times guys have to come up and get a little taste of the NHL, the speed, the pace, all how fast things happen, and not just goalies, other positions too. And the only way you can get that taste is in the NHL, to go back and realize maybe what you still need. And so I think it's great. It
shows to his maturity, you know?
I think so. Yeah. I think this was a year for that to happen for him. Cause I know there was some question about whether or not he was ready to take that next step. And this year sure sounds like he has.
The other really funny part of the story is he's a big guy, and he won the most likely to win a pie eating contest down there, which he took exception to because he doesn't like pies, but he does like his dessert. I think the inference by everybody picking him to win that was that, you know, he probably needs to devote himself a little more to his fitness, which I've kind of alluded to on the pod a couple times. Hey, I'm right there with you. So I appreciate a goalie like that, but that is something that he is going to have to realize. I know he's going to have to probably take that a little more seriously going into the offseason. He says that he's made incredible strides. He said that when he was up here earlier this season, and he said that when we were in Sweden, when the Wild brought him there in Stockholm and all that stuff. Any other questions before we wrap up the pod? Any more? Prank wars are going on right now. I don't know if everybody saw that. Marc-Andre Fleury got Mason Schoell with a hilarious prank yesterday that I really can't talk about. Shaw claims that he's going to get him back. I have a feeling that Marc-Andre Fleury is going to get a welcome from Brandon Duhaime, a little prank today or tomorrow. I didn't realize, but apparently Fleury got Duhaime in Colorado when we were there a couple weeks ago. So prank wars are back.
I'll be interested to hear what you find out.
Yeah. Anthony pranks me every time he shows up to this pod on time. Any other pod questions? Wow, we didn't have a lot of questions today. A couple t-shirts left. I guess we'll have to give them to the next person. Going once. There we go.
I'm in a bunch of different Facebook groups or whatever, and these people just keep saying, why don't the Wild purposely tank so that we can get a better draft pick? What do you say to people that
Anthony,
come up with
that?
This is
your question.
I hate it.
Yeah,
it's... Brandon, the 20,000 podcasts that we've discussed this, can you just play that for her right now?
Yeah, no. Sorry.
No.
Anthony's wrong.
Oh, man. It is... it's... The people that ask the question, we talked about this, I think, the last time we were doing a live show, is they have never been around an NHL locker room. Nobody in that room comes to the rink thinking we'd be better off if we lost. They're not wired that way. And anybody who ever is, like, it got me thinking about this last week when Pittsburgh was going through their roster overhaul with the trade.
How about them, by the way? They're 4 points back.
4 points back. No. But. When you look back, do you realize where they drafted for 4 years in a row in order?
Yeah. I know exactly where they
yes,
drafted.
Yes, they've had an unbelievable run. They had picks
one, two, and one.
They had four in the top four. Was it 3-1s overall?
Well, they had Fleury, Crosby, Malkin was two, right? Malkin was two to yeah. Ovi. Who was the other one? Was it Letang?
I don't remember. I think they had four in the top. Well, they had Stahl.
Oh, yeah, Stahl. Jordan Stahl. There you go. Three, right?
He was number three. Yeah. So they had four picks in the top three. Think of how terrible you have to be for 5 years in a row to get four picks. That's what tanking is. Edmonton had the number one pick four times in 6 years. They had, I think it was 8 years in a row, they were in the top six. And it took them a decade to get back to the playoffs. Chicago was terrible for 10 years. Then they got Taves and Kane. And they were, like, it isn't tank for 2 months and turn your franchise around. I mean,
yeah.
Number one,
Jordan was second, so it would have been 1-2-1-2. That's how it would have been. It would have been Flower. Yeah.
So think
Malkin,
about how bad you are for those
Crosby
years
and then
to be picking
Stahl.
In the top two.
Yeah,
that's what a tank would take, and that nobody wants any part of that. When the Ducks were just here, and you looked at their team, the Sharks, and you think these guys. They're still 2 years away from 3 years away from anything that resembles contention.
Sid was gifted to them in 05, though, too, because of the lockout. So
back when Hines was hired first, it was said that he was on a multi-year deal. Do we know what that is
yet? I assume it's 3 years to go, but I haven't confirmed that.
Three years to go?
Yep,
or
yep, I think to go.
So they yep. got him a four-year deal?
At minimum, maybe 2 years, but I'm pretty sure it's three.
Three?
So, yeah. But... I
can't
say that.
I only asked him about the line combinations for that night.
Yeah.
Not about his contract status.
Or until they fire him and bring in the next guy, right?
Well, yeah. Right.
But just remember, they got to pay, unless he's hired this summer, Dean another year. You know, no team likes to sit there and retain salary. John's here to stay. So, and same thing, like all everybody that's like, you know, is Billy on the hot seat. He got a massive extension. Last summer, so you know, to become the president of hockey ops, so he's going nowhere too.
Yeah, I wasn't saying we should let him go or anything. I was just curious as to what that duration was because
I will be able to confirm that pretty soon. I'm pretty positive. So, but I'm pretty sure. I mean, it's either going to be two after this year or three because that's usually what most coaches get. My gut says it's three after this, just simply because you know I think there was a little cost share with Nashville because he had a year left on his deal, so the Wild got a haircut for this year. So that's just my gut.
Do you think there might be some retooling of the coaching staff again at the year off since he probably didn't
obviously Patchwire is new. They got to decide if he's staying. I think John likes him a lot. Jason King was hired last summer, so he's here to stay, but you know, obviously there are other pieces that he inherited that potentially could be, you know.
Well, anytime a new coach comes in, he's got to figure these. He doesn't know these guys.
Yeah.
And most of them have somebody, a confidant type guy that they've had somewhere in their career. I don't know who that is for John Hines, but in all likelihood, I would assume there will be some kind of addition to the staff that is a guy that he trusts.
Yeah, that's what I meant, because like coming in the middle of a season like that, you can't exactly
set your staff up. I think
there
will be changes. I do think that he likes Patrick Dwyer. Like my gut says at the time, Pat Dwyer was probably here for the rest of the year, and it's been a sort of a tryout for him, and I think they like him a lot. Obviously, he runs the penalty kill. The penalty kill has got to be much, much better, but the common denominator with the penalty kill are the players, not the coach. These players need to be much, much better. Like, I was watching a national broadcast last week. I think it was Eddie Olchuk and Brian Boucher in L.A., and they were going on and on about some of the veterans, Foligno, Middleton, Hartman, and just their lack of, their poor stick positioning on plays and things like that. Like, they need to be coached if that's the case, because these are supposed to be great penalty killers, and they're just making the same mistakes over and over and over again. Thanks, everybody, for coming out here to Split Rocks. Again, our next live show, pay attention to our Twitter accounts, mine, not Anthony's. Anthony will pay attention to mine, and he'll find out with you guys. And then, and obviously, our next three podcasts, if we figure out a date in May, we'll let you know. It'll either be here at Split Rocks, Elsie's, or Tuttle's. Thanks, as always, to our producer, Brandon Morton. Thanks for joining us here at the Aquarius Home Services studio on location here at Split Rocks. Thanks to Aquarius Home Services, your local authorized dealer for Connecticut water treatment systems. Bosch Law Firm, who I, by the way, I met Jerry Bosch at a Wild game last week. Livia Weight Control Center.
I met him at Kowalski's one day.
He just shows up there. Yeah. I was talking to Tanner on the day that Ryan Hartman got suspended. I went down and met Tanner Hartman, his younger brother, and Jerry came up to me while I was talking to Tanner. And then
so you might need legal representation.
Ryan might. Royal Credit Union and Huxley Eyewear. Thanks, everybody, for coming out to Split Rocks.
Thank you.
So much coming out, there's nothing going in. I know that you feel like you're never going to win. Oh, but the world won't forgive a winner.
Well, it's because you just get my blood pressure up. I downloaded an app today to learn breathing exercises, and the app told me that I was more stressed after.